eyes so she could see like a hunting falcon. Don't think too much about your vision. Just think about what you want to see, and the earth will do the rest. Close your eyes. She complied, and I almost wished I had not asked her to. I wanted to look into her eyes again. I had missed her. As you inhale, pay careful attention to the scents in the tent. A candle on the dresser behind you is half burned. As you focus the earth through your body, you will smell its wax, the burned wick, even the lingering smoke, though it hasn't been lit today. "You smell wonderful," she whispered. "I missed you so much." It sounded like her throat was made of broken glass. "Don't speak. I missed you as well, Nadia." I took a deep breath and sighed. "We are almost done. You are doing well." I squeezed her hand again, and she returned the clasp. I spent the next half hour running her through basic earth exercises. Her senses became tuned to the power, and I taught her the basics of how to push the elements through her body. She had much more to learn, but now she would not be driven insane from the overstimulation of her newly heightened senses. "I'm going to get you some water. Then we can talk." I found the guard. Normally, attendants came to check on us every few hours, but I had lost track of time since I had awoken from my dream. "I need an abundant amount of water and food," I told the guards at the door. One nodded and ran into the camp with urgency. I guessed they knew that Nadia had awoken. They probably heard us talking through the thin canvas. "Do not let anyone else in but the food and water. Announce when it is here," I reminded the woman standing guard. "Yes, sir," she saluted. "No one will enter." "Kair," Nadia's voice called me, and I moved back to her side. "Continue your breathing. When food and water get here, we can talk." "Okay." Her voice was a rasp. "Is my father here?" "I need you to concentrate on this. No more talking until you drink and eat." I smiled at her question and thought about how happy she would be when I told her of Beltor. I listened to Nadia's breathing continue for 10 minutes. Then a sound of rattling utensils and plates pulled me to the entrance of the tent. I made my way there and grabbed the plates of food and water jugs from the guard without a word. Then I returned to my friend's side and helped her sit up in the bed. "Drink," I commanded, after I handed her a wooden cup filled with water. She did as I asked, while I uncovered the rest of the food. It was eggs, venison, and steamed cabbage. Nadia took a plate from me and dug into the food without speaking. I sat back in my chair, took a few mouthfuls of the eggs, and then swallowed some water before I spoke again. "What is the last moment you remember?" I started. Nadia didn't look elven, but she definitely wasn't human. The most disturbing thing about changing her had not been this realization. It was that she had not seemed to experience any pain. She put her fork down and looked at me. Her dark hair was a wonderful mess of sleepy tangles, but her eyes met mine and seemed to reflect what little light danced into the tent. The gray blanket had fallen around her waist when she sat up, but Gerald had changed her out of the servant's clothes I had originally found her wearing. Now she wore the simple brown garments of the soldiers in her camp. She closed her eyes and took a long breath. "Nanos. He stabbed me with the knife I wanted to kill him with. Did I kill him?" "He is still alive. You were there. I thought you had died. How are you here? How am I here? We can get into the details tomorrow, after you rest. Last I saw you, we were in your bathroom." She smiled at me, and then covered up her lips with the cup of water. "We were in the hallways of the castle, and I ran after an elven into the city. It was foolish of me. I should have realized that it was a trap." Her eyes widened. They ambushed me in the thick of the streets. I managed to get away and kill most of them. Just as I was about to return to the castle, I heard horses racing out of the west gate. I saw three elvens on horseback. One of the elvens was carrying Jesme. "Nanos betrayed us to the Empress," she said, as she set down her cup. Her mouth made a hard line. "I didn't have time to come back. I just set off after them. Jesme is safe. She is in Meriem, a small dairy village about a week's ride north of us." "Jesme is alive?" "Yes." I couldn't help but smile. "Graykin and your father should be there, along with the Queen. Runeir sent a few dozen men north to get them." "My father is alive?" Her face cracked, and tears streamed from her eyes. I got up from my chair to touch her, but she met me halfway, scattering our plates of food across the floor of the tent. My arms circled her shoulders, and hers came around my chest. She buried her face in my tunic. At Meriem, we learned of Naya being sacked. The news was grim, but I didn't want to believe it. I set off on my own and got back to the castle. I continued my story when her sobs seemed to ebb. I found Graykin in a tavern on the south side of the city, and we exchanged tales. He intended to travel through the sewers and make his way through the dungeon of the castle. He had a small group of men and planned on saving whomever he could from the royal family. I am glad he is alive. Last time I saw him, he was defending Pog and I from half a dozen Loshir soldiers. Nadia pulled her face away from my shoulder and looked into my eyes with a faint smile. We got separated under the dungeons, and they ended up making it there before me. I put on servant's clothes and was going to get my feeling for the workings of the castle, but then I met your father. He had taken over as one of the managers. Nadia laughed and hugged me again. That is just like him. Genius! The sensation of her body laughing against mine made my head spin. Beltor's men found Graykin's, and the three of us discussed what to do next. He had heard no news of your death, so he imagined that you were somewhere in the castle. He knew that Nanos was being kept as a prisoner, but he did not know that the prince had betrayed us. Fucking asshole. After this, I am going to rip each of his rib bones out, one at a time, Nadia seethed. We'll discuss that tomorrow. She was getting agitated, and I wanted her to relax. I did not want to tell her that I was the reason Nanos was alive and well inside the castle. I had not wanted to waste time on him when she needed me to save her life. Your father left a note for Nanos and had it delivered with his food. There were instructions to meet in the West Wing's garden about your whereabouts. Her eyes flashed dangerously, and I smiled. Nanos came to the meeting place, but the leader of the elvens found him and then questioned him about the note. The elven leader threatened Nanos. I couldn't hear what he said. Then he left. We caught up with Nanos before he made it back to the castle and told him what we were planning. We had no idea he had betrayed the kingdom. He's done worse than that. Her voice tore like she wanted to scream. What did he do? I asked. Runeir said that Nadia had been imprisoned by Nanos and the elvens. He told me that the prince gave us up to the empress, but had he done something worse to Nadia? I felt my blood begin to boil as I imagined the annoying blonde man raping her. Finish, please. She gritted her teeth and let out a deep breath. I searched her eyes for some hidden message, but all I saw was anger. Nanos explained that you were in the dungeons. He said he would create a distraction out in the city and then help us free you. Afterward, we plan to leave with the Queen and him. Fucking cock-sucking piece of shit bastard, she muttered under her breath. We met with him, and you can probably guess what happened. Nadia nodded and frowned. I made a deal with the elvens. They said they really didn't care about keeping your father, Graykin, or the Queen, but they needed you and Nanos here. They wouldn't show you to me, but they said if I agreed to stay as their prisoner, they would keep you alive. I smirked with Nadia's chuckle. Runeir had already broken me out of the dungeon. They had no idea where I was. They played you. She shook her head in dismay. I didn't want you to get hurt. Their leader's name is Alatoricht, and I thought him more of a fool than he is. I understand. She gave me a faint smile and sniffed a little. Sorry to interrupt this, but you really do smell amazing, like wood smoke, lavender, and jasmine. She inhaled again. It is just the earth playing with your senses. She frowned again, and I could feel her try to reduce the amount of power she pulled. I don't know. Maybe. Please continue, she said. Alatoricht threatened to kill you if I didn't remain locked up in my room. They had guards that left every half hour to report on my obedience. I should have... Wait, you were in your old room? Nadia interrupted me. Yes. Fuck. She was taking me to have dinner with you. Nadia put her face in her hands and moaned in disappointment. Runeir told me that Islata came to get you. I had made a side deal with her, and she agreed to let you go if I would make sure that she was in the meetings I would have with the Empress. I despise that bitch, she said with vehemence that seemed more passionate than her loathing of Nanos, and I guessed why. Runeir hadn't wanted to give me the details, but I pulled enough out of him to guess that Islata tried to have some sort of twisted fun with Nadia before she was brought to me. I decided to change the subject quickly before my friend lost control of her new powers, or asked about my relationship with Islata. I've been remembering more, I said. Nadia's eyes instantly moved back to my face. I've been keeping things from you, but if you want to know, I will tell you everything I remember. I want to know everything about you. Her hand reached up to my face, and her fingertips traced my cheekbone. I don't understand everything yet, but I will tell you what I know. Most of it isn't pleasant. I don't care. Nadia pulled herself to me again and sighed in comfort. Eventually I would have to tell her about Iolarothi, about Shlara, about Jesme, and about Islata. But not now. At this moment, I just wanted to be close to her. I had a memory that was painful, and I became angry. I think I destroyed the east wing of the castle. The dream of making love to Iolarothi and then killing Shlara flashed through my mind. I had woken up in the ruins of my room and sat at the apex of the destruction. I did not remember it, but I knew I had caused the explosion that left part of the castle in ruins. That woman took me up the stairs to your floor, Nadia whispered against my chest. Then I was lying on my back. There was dust everywhere. I couldn't hear, and I felt like I was going to die. When I awoke, I knew that I had to find you. I heard your heart beating as you ran away. I knew Nanos would be in the safe room. I had to avenge the king and Pog before I died, and since I knew the combinations... What? I pulled her away from me and stared at her face. I realized my mouth was open and closed it with a hollow clank. What did Nanos do to his father and Pog? I demanded. Her eyes opened in shock. I thought Runeir would have told you. She gauged my reaction and quickly continued. Pog tripped while we were fleeing the Loshers. I tried to help him up, but Graykin threw himself at the men. When Pog and I got to the door of the safe room, Nanos was standing over his father's body with a bloody sword. Pog grabbed the king's blade and tried to defend me. I was too slow, and the Losher men caught up to us. Nanos ran Pog through the stomach. He died on the ground next to the king. The edges of my vision turned a dark red. I heard my heart thunder in my chest. I tasted blood in my mouth, and I didn't care that I was biting my tongue. He'll pay for what he has done. I'm glad you left him alive. We can have a trial and execute him under the law. Nadia put her hand on my shoulder and ran her fingertips up to my jaw. It didn't make me feel any better. Nanos isn't here, I sighed. What? She almost screamed in surprise. You were hurt, and I used magic to change you. I didn't have time to deal with him, and I hadn't realized he killed his father and Pog. I left him in the castle, and I fled with you, Runeer, your guards, and Graykin's men. My heart filled with sadness. Pog was just a boy, no swordsman or warrior. He had been butchered, trying to avenge his king and save his friend. Shit! Nadia gasped. Fuck! Her hands moved away from me and covered her face, hiding her tears. I didn't know. There was a lump in my throat. Fuck me! I should have guessed what a snake Nanos was. He betrayed more than his kingdom. I should have killed him when I had the chance. I'm sorry, Pog. You couldn't have known, Kaer, Nadia said, after she recovered from the news. I heard several booted feet approach the tent in unison. Nadia and I looked at each other, and she mouthed the name of her blonde friend. You cannot enter, sir. Kaer left instructions, the guard said, with little authority in her voice. I gave her credit for speaking against him. She didn't report to me. She reported to Nadia or Runeer. Move aside, Runeer commanded, before he stepped into the tent. You're awake, Runeer's smile filled his face. Four other men followed him into the tent. I knew they were Nadia's generals, but I had not yet interacted with them. And you haven't washed the hair dye out yet, Nadia said with a smirk before she opened her arms to hug the handsome man. When did you awake? He asked after they parted. A few hours ago, I answered. You did not summon me? He glared at me. We had to speak privately, Nadia answered for me. Nadia looked to her generals and was about to greet them, but Runeer interrupted her. I have other news. His face lost the pleasant smile Nadia's awakening had given him. He looked to me before he spoke again. The Empress has moved south with her army. They are a week away from the castle, between us and Meriem. Shit, Nadia and I said in unison. The men I sent returned without trying to work around the army. They felt it would have been too risky, and I agree. Runeer continued. Is it possible that they didn't even see the village? I asked. Meriem was a few miles off of the major road that led north out of Naya. I doubt it, he shook his head. It looks like she has over 20,000 soldiers. They would have discovered the village. They have probably captured Jesme, Graykin, the Queen, and your father. Runeer glanced to Nadia. We don't know that for sure. She tried to sound hopeful, but I saw the fear on her face. Runeer nodded and smiled, but they both looked to me to see if I agreed. Hope was a valuable commodity. I know how to find out. How? Nadia asked. I know where the village is, and I can slip through the Empress's lines undetected. I've had to outmaneuver their enemies many times. No, it is too risky. Nadia's face grew angry. You've said that before, I smiled at her, but I am going to go with or without your permission. You've said that before, and the answer was still no. Nadia's lips drew a hard line that matched her voice. I need you here with me. She seemed to realize that Runeer and her generals were in the tent, and her cheeks turned a slight shade of red. Juliar, Wheaton, Corvan, and Yebar, can you excuse us? Nadia asked the four generals. I'll be prepared for our meeting tomorrow morning. The men nodded and left. Wheaton was the oldest of the generals and the last to leave. He gave me a grateful nod as he walked past me. Jesme, Graykin, and your father need me as well. I had this same conversation with Jess before I left Meriem to come to Naya, I said as soon as the men exited. The three of us sat in silence for a few minutes. I could see Nadia trying to puzzle out a way to keep me here, but her delay only increased the tension between the three of us. I expected her to tell Runeer to leave, but she didn't. Perhaps she didn't want to be alone with me, or maybe she didn't want the man to know that she wanted to be alone with me. Finally, I decided that I wasn't going to wait for her to think of more reasons for me to stay. I'll leave in the morning. What I've taught you today about the Earth should be enough for you to work on for a few weeks while I try to find them. I nodded to Runeer, and he returned the movement. Relief was plain on his face. Wait, Nadia said, as I stepped out of the tent. I didn't want to turn back to her, but I did. Do not ask me to stay. I will say yes. Her eyes began to tear up, and I could not stand it any more. I closed the tent flap and swam through the throngs of troops toward the quartermaster's pavilion. It was after lunch, and I still had a few hours to get supplies together before nightfall. I knew going to Naya would be difficult. One did not simply walk into a conquered city, find the remnants of an overthrown ruling family, and rescue them without any confrontation. This mission seemed simpler. Circumnavigate an army, determine if Meriem had been sacked, and then return with either news of the royal family or them in tow. There would be no need to interact with the Elvens beyond butchering any that got in my way. Or so I hoped.
Chapter 3. Jesme. I paused for a moment and leaned against one of the many ancient trees that surrounded me. Its bark was soft, brown, and slightly abrasive. Kair had told me the names of these trees a few times. Were they maple? Pine? I knew they weren't oak, as oak trees dotted the hills around my home, and these looked different. They were straight and upright, dressed with needles that stayed green around the year. I heard movement behind me, and I spun toward the small shrubs that caused the rustle. I didn't think anyone had followed me, but I had no way of preventing it if someone wished to do so. The noise grew louder, and a large gray rabbit bounced out of the bushes, eyed me suspiciously, and softly bounded off to my left. I sighed and relaxed against the rough bark of the tree. It was mid-morning, and my time to be with Kair. I suspected that Greta knew that I came out here to mourn. The older woman gave me a look of pity every time I finished helping her with the breakfast dishes and told her I wanted to take a walk through the trees. She seemed to understand my loss and need to be alone. She never questioned where I went or what I did when I reached my destination. Perhaps that was the way of our sex. Tira and Jerry were another story. Tira latched onto me as if I were the sister that she never had. When she wasn't helping Jerry herd the cattle or her father Ray out milk, she followed me around like a puppy and asked me hundreds of questions about life in the city. The questions sometimes hit too close to a sensitive topic, and I tried to do my best to answer them without revealing my identity. Greta may have guessed that I was someone of importance, as she often told Tira to stop bothering me. I doubted that any of them could fathom the truth. Thankfully, Jerry spent little time around the house. He was younger than I, but looked at me the way most men did. I was used to it. Even in Naya, men and boys had been looking at me with lust for years, whether hidden beneath the elaborate veneer of manners and breeding, as with the nobles of the capital, or raw and unchecked, as it was with the men of the village. The look was the same. The look was hungry. And my mother had taught me that it was my duty as a lady to ignore it and keep it in check with modesty and virtue. I would have thought that the presence of Kair would have struck some fear into Jerry, or at least a sort of respect for a woman that he knew to be joined. But, alas, his stares seem to have gotten more lecherous since Gaier has been away. Yesterday evening, he asked me if I ever thought of remarrying, since my beloved had not returned to claim me. Rayat yelled at his son for a good 10 minutes. But he couldn't really punish him. His family was probably the wealthiest in the small town, but there was still too much work to do, and he could ill afford an incapacitated son, nor another mouth to feed. I listened again for any movement, and heard nothing. My destination was only a mile from the tree line that opened to the range of fields where the cattle grazed. Then it was another half mile through the grass to the house we all shared. They would expect me back soon, so I set off deeper into the forest. I had tried to help with some of the farm chores, but it quickly became obvious that I was more suited to occupations that did not actually involve hard labor. I thought I could help Greta with knitting and sewing, as I had spent countless hours embroidering with my handmaidens and was adept at weaving. But the rough repair work Greta did to keep the family's clothes and equipment in working order was vastly different than the decorative stitches I knew. Everything I had ever learned was simply a frivolity to occupy the time of someone who did not need to work. Perhaps the men were right in the way they looked at me. I only seemed to exist for one purpose, whether I was a princess or a girl on a farm. I cleaned up dishes after meals, so this gave Greta some relief during the day and helped me feel as if I contributed something, however small. I sighed and smiled slightly as I continued my walk. My hands were rough from the work. The lye soap was harsh, and my skin was red and peeling. My fingernails were worn down. These were no longer the hands of a lady. My mother had scolded me as a child for forgetting to wear gloves outside. If she could see me scrubbing plates for a family of peasants, she would be beside herself with horror. I didn't like my mother. Therefore, I loved washing dishes. I tried to push the angry blonde woman and soapy tub of water out of my thoughts with a frown. Mother definitely would not approve of any of the novel activities I'd participated in during the last few months, especially the love that I shared with Gaier. She and my brother were of similar mindset and demeanor on most topics, especially him. I breathed deeply and enjoyed the scent of the needles, wet dirt, and moss. I was getting close to my destination, and my footsteps grew quicker with excitement. My hand brushed up against the trunk of a large tree that guarded the entrance. Its bark felt rough, but it was soft beneath and gave slightly as I pushed on it with my hand to steady myself as I passed. It reminded me of his face and hair, but it didn't comfort me. Then I reached our glade. It was a small clearing, only a quarter of the size of the royal garden. A spring twisted through the meadow, bubbling over slick moss-covered rocks and splitting the tall grass of the field in an embarrassed grin. The grass was as green as Kair's eyes and as soft as his kisses. He had discovered the spot while hunting and brought me to it. We had escaped here for a few hours every day. We spent our time speaking freely, unburdened by the fear that the villagers would discover us. And we made love. It was furtive and desperate. We were clinging to each other with the knowledge that we were running out of time. For me, it had always felt this way. As much as I loved the idea, a part of me knew I could never be with Kair if we returned to Naya. If I went back, I would forfeit any freedom to make a choice. But Kair had been unaware of our customs and dismissive of my fears about our relationship. He was not anxious or scared of losing me until we reached Meriem. Once he knew he had to return, his lovemaking matched mine. We knew each time was one of our last, and we cherished each other. I knew he did not want to leave me, but we both knew that he had to. As much as I wanted and needed him to stay, I would have lost some respect for him if he had. I could not love a coward. I slipped off my leather shoes and walked barefoot across the grass until it turned into smooth moss and rocks by the chiming creek. I carefully sat down and dangled my toes into the frigid water. He should have returned by now. It had been 2 months since he left. He promised he would return soon with whatever news could be found in Naya's capital. Was he dead? Captured? On his way back to me? Grandmother, I sat up and spoke my prayer out loud. Please keep Kyaer safe. Bring him back to me alive. Please let him find my brother and mother. Please bless their safe escape. My father's mother always spoiled me when I was a little girl. When the fever took her, I prayed to her spirit for guidance and protection. A slight breeze picked up, and a marvelous blue jay fluttered to the ground next to me. The bird looked at me with a tilted head, chirped loudly, and then dunked his blue body into the water of the creek to refresh himself. Blue was my favorite color, and the jays were my favorite bird. It was a sign. Thank you for hearing me. I smiled at the bird before it took to the air again with a startled squawk. I stared at the stream and let my mind wander back to Kyaer again. After a few minutes, I realized I was rubbing my stomach. I had asked my grandmother for other blessings as well, but the blue jay was the first sign that she had heard me. Perhaps it was for the best. At first, I had been apprehensive about bearing Kyaer's child. I knew how distressed my father and mother would be. They had both been planning to leverage my joining to another kingdom in an effort to solidify our treaties. This would ruin their plans and bring my family dishonor. I knew this. I knew how important my maidenhood was. But I couldn't stop myself from desiring this strange man once I beheld his sleeping body on the stone table in the crypt Nadia found. He had no idea that, technically, we were joined. The marriage ceremony required that the bride and groom drink from the same cup. Kyaer offered his cup to me at the inn in Brilla before the men tried to kill us. It was not exactly legitimate, but if necessary, I could position our child's conception to have taken place within the boundaries of a makeshift marriage. My handmaidens spoke of sex often. They told me how good it felt, but they had not done it justice. Perhaps Kyaer was just incredibly skilled. The fear of explaining a child to my parents was easily overshadowed by the pleasure he gave me. He had been neither concerned nor excited when I told him I might be expecting. He had just smiled at me and asked me if it was what I wanted. It bothered me that he was so indifferent. He treated the entire conversation with the same nonchalance as he would have toward a discussion on whether we should have porridge or fruit for breakfast. I was too timid to express my feelings or push him for a stronger show of emotion. It hurt to see how little he seemed to care, but I could not let him see how desperately I wanted a child with him. I consoled myself with the thought that he would grow to love a baby if we conceived one. Abstract concepts were often difficult for men to get emotional over the way women could. But I knew he loved me, and I knew he would love our child. I just wanted him with me for the rest of my life. When I had my moon flow, we didn't speak of it again, but I continued to dream of the beautiful baby that could have solidified our love. I thought about the last time we made love. We came back to our glade and spent our last few hours with our spirits entwined, our lips feasting on each other, and his body filling mine. Memories were always flawed. The day after he left, I remembered every kiss he gave me in perfect, beautiful detail. A week after, I could only remember the few positions we enjoyed and what it had felt like for him to fill me. Now that 2 months had passed, I could only clearly remember what it felt like to lie in his arms after we made love. Everything else was a blur of passion and warmth. My family was dead. My home was gone. The only two things that mattered were Kyaer's seed finding a fertile womb and him returning to me. After that, we would build a life together, a life away from the ancients, the death of my family, the crumbling of my old life. Our new life would be sweet and wonderful. I smiled at the sky. Unlike me, my lover had been amazingly adept at the various chores around the dairy farm. Rehat often commented that having Kair helping with the work was like having a team of 20 men. During our first full day here, he cut enough wood for the rest of the winter from a fallen tree in the outskirts of the forest and hauled it back to the farmhouse. Then he repaired the roof of the barn, killed two deer, and harvested several baskets full of wild mushrooms, greens, and berries. In our new life together, he would have no problem providing for our children. I'd just have to do my part and learn how to maintain the farmhouse.
Jess?
I opened my eyes and sat up with a cry. Oh, I must have fallen asleep.
It's okay. It is only me.
A large hand held onto my left shoulder. Jerry. You scared me. My heart beat quickly, and it didn't seem to want to calm.
Sorry, you look so peaceful, sleeping. I didn't want to wake you.
He smiled and squeezed my shoulder reassuringly. How did you find me? I looked up at the sky and noticed the color of the sun. Kair taught me how to read the position, and it had probably been a few hours since I fell asleep.
I followed you. I wondered where you went every day.
His mouth broke into a smile that did not bring me any happiness. I returned the smile, though. It was never good manners to be rude to someone, even if they had been rude to you. Or so my grandmother taught me. We should be getting back. I stood up and tried not to sound annoyed. Jerry's presence made me uncomfortable here.
No, let's spend some time here together. This is quite a charming spot you have found. I never explored the forest much. How did you find this place?
He tugged lightly on my arm in an effort to get me to sit down next to him. My husband found it while he hunted. We should return. Your mother will wonder where I am, and your father and sister will need your help. The lie about Kair came so easily to my lips. Grandmother had sent me a sign. Soon he would come back to me and we could make it true.
They won't worry. My chores are done for the day, and you aren't very useful around the house anyway.
I looked down at him to see if he was joking, but his face had lost its ugly smile.
My parents are nice people, and took you and your husband in. But we've had to work harder to feed you, and there hasn't been any sort of payment. You may not see it, but it burdens them.
He frowned. We gave you two horses, some gold, and my husband helped with many chores around the farm. We all owe debt to your parents. I shook my arm lightly and looked at his hand. I didn't want to tell him to let me go. I assumed the look would indicate my wishes.
Maybe you have trued up with my parents, but you haven't settled with me. I've had to do extra work because of you. If a man works to feed and take care of a woman, she normally pays him back in some way.
He didn't let go of my arm. If anything, his grip tightened. I don't have any more gold, Jerry. When my husband returns, he will bring some. A cold nausea crept into my stomach.
Your husband is not coming back. He probably left you here because you were so useless as a wife.
The man got up but still held onto my arm. He stood as tall as Kair and must have weighed more than two of me put together. Working with cattle and eating well added a lot of muscle to someone's frame. Jerry was almost a mountain standing over me.
But there is one thing I'm sure you are useful for. I've seen the looks you've been giving me at dinner. You want this as much as I do.
I love my husband. I haven't been giving you looks.
Are you calling me a liar?
His grip tightened on my arm painfully and spittle flew out of his horrid mouth. His breath was rank, and his hand on my arm was sweaty and rough. You're hurting me, Jerry. Let me go. My voice cracked and tears came to my eyes. I was paralyzed. This was happening so fast. I was a fool and should have realized what he intended when he found me here. He grabbed my shoulder with his other hand and pulled me toward him. I moved my face out of the way of his kiss, but I still felt his slimy tongue lap at the corner of my mouth and my cheek. My stomach flipped as if I was falling. No, stop! I tried to scream, but it came out as a whimper. I struggled against his grip, but I was suddenly on the ground. Jerry's left hand clamped down on my right shoulder and pushed me into the soft moss where Kair and I had spent countless hours together. His right hand tried to force my legs open so he might kneel between them. My legs came to life, and I was able to kick and twist them out of his way. "Stop squirming, bitch!" he yelled down at me. My world spun when he struck me across the face. Everything went black when he hit me again. I tasted blood and tried to scream, but I couldn't get enough air into my lungs. "Kair, I need you."
"You asked for this. Don't forget."
He forced my legs open, and I felt him pushing up my dress toward my hips. I tried to close my legs again, but his knees were in between them. Then I tried to scoot away, but his grip on my shoulder was too strong. I tried to scream, but nothing came out except for a muffled cry. He reached down and pulled at my undergarments. My legs were spread around his knees so they wouldn't come off easily. I tried to push him away, but it was pointless. He just ignored my hands and tugged hard at the thin material, ripping it away with a sickening tear and exposing my entrance to him. Even when the ancients had captured me, I had not felt fear like this. I was sure I would be tortured, maybe even raped. But it seemed like such a distant possibility when our destination lay many weeks' travel to the north. I had a slim hope that because they were using me for political leverage, they would need to keep me relatively unharmed, and they had. Aside from being cold and hungry, I was not hurt in any way. And I had hoped that Kair would come for me, and he did. Just like the stories of the princess being saved by her champion. This was different. This was much worse. No one else was going to save me. I should have known Jiri was going to do this. Now there was nothing I could do. He would violate me unless I figured out how to escape. I just didn't want him to hit me again. It hurt so badly, and I couldn't stand the pain. I looked around the glade. There was no way anyone would hear me from this distant, sheltered spot, even if I could call out without him striking me again. I did not carry a weapon, and I cursed myself for being so naive as to think I did not need one. I looked nearby for something within arm's reach I could use to stun him long enough so I could run away. I could run. I was smaller than Jiri and nowhere near as strong, but I could be faster. I had to be. My head hurt, but I was conscious and otherwise uninjured. If I could get him off me long enough to rise, I would run. I felt around me with my free hand for a loose rock or a stick, anything to use as a weapon against this beast. My fingers grasped nothing but the soft, wet moss. Jiri fumbled with his belt ties with his right hand while he held me down with his left. His face was frantic with excitement, lust, and rage. My stomach knotted in terror, driving the air in and out of my body in a painful screech. He let go of my shoulder and kneeled upright a little more so both of his hands could access his belt.
"Don't move. If you fight, it'll just hurt more."
His hands moved quickly, and he unfastened his belt before he got the words out of his ugly mouth. Then he set about untying the leather cords over his crotch. His fingers were thick and shaking. It would take him a few more seconds to get it undone. I screamed as loud as I could, and I pulled my knees to my chest. Then I kicked him in the groin and toppled him backward. He yelped in surprise, but I had already made it to my feet and set off running away from him. If I could get over the creek and into the forest, I could outrun him. I could escape. I would escape. I made it 2 steps. Before I felt his hand close around my ankle. I slipped on the smooth moss, fell forward into the creek, and inhaled a mouthful of the spring water. His hand yanked on my ankle again, dragging me out of the water. I sputtered and gagged, and cried, and prayed to my grandmother, and begged Kair to come to save me like he had before.
"Bitch, stop it!"
He smacked me again, and I screamed in pain. Then I lost all my air when he punched me in the stomach. The pain numbed me everywhere.
"I'll fuck you from behind like a horse if you don't lie still."
I hated his voice. He yanked the front of my dress to get me on my back. It ripped open and exposed my breasts. The sight of them distracted him for a moment, and he grabbed at them hungrily instead of trying to force my legs apart. I could not feel him touching me anymore. It was as if I was in someone else's body, watching this happen. It was not me. Someone else was being groped by this beast. Someone else was about to be raped. "Damn, you're beautiful. I'm going to enjoy this." He rubbed my breasts roughly for a few more moments and then yanked my thigh to force me open. "Maybe you'll give me a baby, huh? Then you'll be mine forever." He sneered, and he grabbed onto his erection with his right hand. It wasn't hard yet, but it started to become stiffer with his quick strokes. He punched me in the stomach. The thought hit me harder than the actual blow. My pain was replaced by anger. Kair wasn't going to save me. He was not here. My grandmother wasn't going to save me. She was dead. My father was dead. My mother was dead, as was my brother, Nadia Graykin. They were all gone. All I had left was the gift Kair gave me. I had to protect our baby. My right hand closed around a large, heavy river rock. Nadia, Runir, and even Enos had offered to teach me basic martial arts, but I had never been interested. Violence bored me, and Graykin was always there to protect me. My attack with the rock must have been slow, awkward, and easy to dodge, but Jerry was not a warrior. He was slow, lumbering, and distracted by his penis. He was not expecting it. The rock hit him in the teeth with the staccato cracking sound of ice breaking. "Whoa!" He screamed and fell. I was up and at the tree line of the glade before I glanced back over my shoulder to see him getting to his feet. Blood poured between the fingers that covered his mouth. He looked at me with hatred, but I disappeared into the forest before I saw if he followed me. Just a few hours ago, this trail had comforted me. Now every branch seemed to tear at my face, every rock caused me to stumble. It had been a dozen years since I ran through the castle chasing Nadia, Runir, and Enos. But then I didn't have breasts, I was not wearing a tattered dress, and I never forgot my shoes next to a creek. I clutched my stomach where Jerry had punched me. It was tender and bruised. I screamed as I stepped on a thorn and felt it cut through my right foot. I took a few steps on it and cried through the pain. The barb forced me to stop, lean against a tree, and dig through the blood on the bottom of my soft feet. After what seemed like an eternity, I found the thorn and pulled it out without screaming again. Then I continued to run through the forest toward the farmhouse. Each step spread my blood upon the dirt and drove pain up into my leg. "Jess!" His voice bounced through the trees like wind. My legs burned, my lungs breathed fire, and my foot was slick with blood. What was I thinking? He could easily outrun me. Even if I had somehow made it to the farmhouse, Jerry was larger than his father and might attack the older man. Even if they didn't come to blows, Jerry had shown what he was capable of. There was nothing the rest of his family could do to stop him. Eventually, he would get me alone and violate me. I was not safe in his home. I was not safe in this village. I was only safe with Kair.
"Stop running!"
His scream sounded closer, but it wasn't articulated. I hoped I had broken his jaw with the rock. I screamed in fear and pain as the toe of my left foot stubbed against a big rock. Then I fell face first into the moldy leaves and dirt of the trail. Fortunately, my arms had been covering my breasts, so they helped cushion the impact. I tried to push myself to my feet, but my foot was numb. I couldn't see through my tears, but it didn't look like it bled. The pain shot up through my calf and into my hip, but I could limp with a skipping speed.
"Jess, stop!"
He sounded close behind me, but I didn't want to turn toward the voice. I would probably fall again, and then he would catch me. The trees were closing in on me. My dress snagged on one, and half of the bottom tore away, leaving me with only a small piece of cloth to cover my whole body. I couldn't breathe anymore. I felt so tired. Kair had always done various exercises throughout the day. He had told me that it was important to be ready to use one's body, and I had joked that I was always ready for him to use my body. I should have taken his advice. If only he was here right now, I shouldn't have let him go. The light of the forest got brighter through my tears. I almost cried in joy. The tree line ended at a short distance from me. Then I would be out in the open field behind the farmhouse. Someone would see me. Someone would help me.
Stop!
I turned around and saw the big man running after me. Blood poured from his foaming mouth and soaked the front of his tunic like spilled wine. I felt myself stumble since I wasn't watching where I ran. Jerry loomed so close. I couldn't afford to stop, but my left foot stopped working, and I collapsed with a scream. Into Graykin's arms.
What the hell is going on here?
His voice echoed in my head and made my brain ache. I tried to explain, but the only words that escaped my lips were garbled by the sobs that my chest unleashed. I didn't believe that it was him. Joy swung my emotions away from the terror, and I didn't know if I cried in relief or fear. I heard footsteps behind me. Graykin had been looking at me, but his eyes quickly darted to Jerry running out of the trees. His eyes narrowed and a growl escaped his mouth. It felt like thunder rumbling through his chest and into my body. I couldn't stop shaking. I tried to inhale, but the sobs caught up with me again. Graykin surely understood now what was transpiring.
Jerry, I presume?
Another voice asked. Another beautiful, familiar voice. Nadia's father stood next to the old bear. He had grown out his beard and shaved his head, but I recognized my uncle. I wiped my eyes on Graykin's tunic and sighed. Kair must have brought them here. Jerry rubbed his arm across his mouth to clean off the blood. He eyed me and the two men warily.
Interfering with family matter,
he muttered through broken teeth.
What did he do to you?
Graykin growled at me. I shook my head and couldn't speak over the lump in my throat. Tears started to come to my eyes again. I was safe. Thank the spirits. Thank you, Grandmother.
I didn't do anything.
Jerry looked at the two men in confusion.
Who are you?
I'm her uncle. This is her guardian. Did you rape my niece, boy?
The Duke's words were as sharp as the sword he fluidly drew from his hip. The boy had seemed so large and powerful before, but as the Duke took a few steps toward him, he shrunk in size.
No, I didn't rape her.
He looked at me with panic in his eyes and sank to his knees. The movements made his opened belt rattle like clinking coins.
Then I'll kill you quickly instead of torturing you.
The bearded man's mouth set as he pulled his sword arm back to deliver a cut to the boy.
Beltor!
Graykin hissed in an urgent whisper. The Duke stopped his swing and looked at the giant man with a question in his eyes. Then they grew wide and his hard face frowned.
Fuck.
I realized he was looking toward the village.
Can we escape into the forest?
The bear asked.
It's too late.
I pulled away from Graykin's chest. The small village of Merriam was home to 150 families, mostly small dairy and cattle farmers. The farmhouse I had shared with Jerry and his family was on the outskirts of town, at a slightly higher elevation. From the open field where we stood, we can see the entire village, all the homes, stables, and people. And the dozens of ancients that filed into the town on horseback. And they could see us.
Chapter 4. The O'Barney. "What's your name, stranger?" the wizened old man hissed through the gaping holes in his toothy grimace. "Stranger is fine," I replied. "What do you have for trade?" It had been a few weeks since I had spoken to anyone, and my mouth slurred the words. The trader grunted and cocked his head over his shoulder at the dilapidated cart. Torn and dirty sheets dangled from the pillars of the wooden gurney like sails. I didn't see a horse, and I wondered if the old man pulled it with raw willpower and limited aid from the wind. Few pans, pots, lizard skins, salt, packs. I came from dead flats, so most of my wares are gone, taking salt up to the green mountains. He grinned again and squinted. I figured he was trying to see through the wrappings around my face and shoulders. After a few seconds with no response from me, he spat on the dry, salty ground of the desert. The spittle splattered purple and smelled like a week-old crow carcass. Any water? I brushed my hand past the three skins I carried and shook one. It rang half-empty, and I had been told that the town of Dead Flats was still another 4 days' walk from the middle of the salt desert. It was the last place I believed she fled. I could run there in 6 hours, but it would be mildly uncomfortable without a few more sips of water. Then again, I was used to discomfort. Not trading water, the old man was suddenly suspicious, and he glanced at the short hunting spear I carried. He journeyed in a group of half a dozen other travelers that I crossed on my way to the town. The other men were not traders, and apparently not his kinsmen. His heart rate rose. He had little confidence they would protect him if I decided to steal his water. There was so much fear. With the elvens gone, we had turned on each other instead of working for a better future. This was not the world Schlara wanted. "Relax, old one. I'm not going to take any." I put a smile to my lips, and although he couldn't see it through the wraps on my face, it came through my words. This seemed to make him more nervous, so I quickly changed my tactic. "Could you trade me some information? I'd like to know more about Dead Flats. That is, if you know anything about the place." I added the right emphasis to my voice so that it would seem that I doubted his expertise. This was an effective strategy I had honed while traveling around the world speaking to humans. After the eradication of our masters, we were left with nothing but our knowledge. People were proud of what they knew and eager to prove it to anyone who would listen. "I've been traveling this route longer than you've been alive, boy." He spat on the ground again. I almost laughed. He couldn't have known that I was probably older than him, that I was once the leader of the greatest army this world had ever seen, and what I was doing in this desolate place at the edge of the habitable world. "How many people live there?" I asked quickly. 2,000. There is a big underground river that flows beneath the hard pack of the mesa, fresh water that is untouched by the salt. I nodded. It sounded more like a city than a town, and I wondered how I would be able to find her. "How often does the town see new travelers?" "You ask a lot of questions. You should leave him alone unless you want to trade," one of the other men of the group said with a guttural growl. He sat at a campfire behind me. Twilight was an hour away, but moving across the salt desert would sap energy from even the Obarni. These men were frail humans and probably beyond exhausted. "Sorry, friend." I apologized and debated killing them all. It would only take me a few seconds, and I would be able to have a more honest discussion with the old man. Then I sighed. Schlara wouldn't have wanted that either. I had to accomplish my goal without murdering any more of my kin. "I'll be heading there. Thank you for your time." I nodded to the old, diseased trader and walked out of their small campground and toward the town. The heat bent the air coming off of the desolate plain, and for a second I thought I saw a tree or a person in the distance. "Wait, stranger," the old man called. "You can't leave now. It is almost night, and the lizards will be out. Best wait with us till morning. The next campground with water is a 10-hour walk at least." "I better run then," I said, as I increased my tempo into a slow jog. 5 seconds passed, and I heard one of the men call me a crazy fuck. Then I was half a mile away and heard nothing but the sound of the wind screaming, and my booted feet slamming into the dry plates of the desert like a snare drum's paradiddle. The salt desert lay on the southeast end of the continent, where our final battle had taken place. The land had been owned by the elven tribe of Grilitar, but they abandoned the territory many years before the last battle. Their exodus and eventual extinction left their human slaves to fend for themselves and carve a life out of the harsh environment. These people had never seen one of my kind and only heard of our crusade through distant travelers. Now the Elvens were probably as much of a myth as the Obarni. This forgotten piece of the world would be the perfect place